Okay, this is Gary Parrish from CBSSports.com. It is now late on March 24th. We're getting very close to Wednesday, March 25th, and this is the Eye on College Basketball podcast. I'm joined, as usual, by my colleagues Matt Norlander and Sam Bassini, and another busy day on the college basketball beat. Forget that the Sweet 16 actually gets started here in you know, less than 48 hours. We had a coaching change in the Pac-12. Herb Sendek, gone after 9 seasons at Arizona State, only made 2 NCAA tournaments. I'll be honest with you, I had heard, you know, because like you would think he might be in trouble for all the obvious reasons. As recently as 2 weeks ago, people around that program and around Herb, and I think even Herb himself, I'm told, like they thought everything was cool, like no problem. And then I started hearing yesterday, after the NIT loss at Richmond, that there might actually be a problem. Then, of course, we realize he's going to meet with the AD at like 9:45 on Tuesday morning, like less than 24 hours after they return to Tempe, and that's never a good sign. And then, of course, he's removed, and now Arizona State will launch a national search, although I've been told if Jeff Capel wants the job, Jeff Capel will be the next head coach at Arizona State. Norlander, your thoughts on the end of the Herb Sendek era at Arizona State?
Yeah, what an era it was. I can't believe he's been there 9 years, by the way.
It does seem like forever.
Neither can I.
That blows my mind. And he just, I mean, he been a weird year. Had every kind of right, I guess, to think he'd be okay. He had a contract revised 3 months ago, which sometimes can mean nothing. I mean, obviously, when there are buyouts involved and schools have the money and they want to make a move, they'll make a move. But it did seem like he would get one more year from my perspective. But they move on. I think it's a good move. I mean, he has had time.
Yeah.
For Capel, I think you take that. I mean, if it's his to turn down, listen. It's a really solid job that's underperformed for the past 30 years for the most part, but good area, obviously really good league. Capel has head coaching experience. How long does he want to stay as a Duke assistant? Krzyzewski's not, we don't think, leaving in the next 3 or 4 years, so it now becomes an interesting subplot with Duke in that, you know, Bobby Hurley is now rumored for DePaul. I think he would be really good for that job. But then you've got Collins at Northwestern, you've got Woj at Marquette, and you right. might have Capel at Arizona State. And the general consensus with Duke here is that it will be a Duke guy that succeeds, Krzyzewski. So we'll have an interesting race between those guys and kind of, you know, who Krzyzewski might want combined with who's the most successful over the next 3 to 5 years. If I'm Capel, I take it. Because I think ultimately when that Duke job is given, it's going to go to a current head coach. So get back out there. And I would think that he will take it, but let's see how the next week or so plays out. Because, you know, the weird thing is here is, well, let's say Duke goes to the national title game. Is Arizona State going to be willing to wait? Maybe they will. Maybe they won't. Sometimes schools do and sometimes they don't. But if you've got him going on for another 2 weeks or so, what kind of candidates are you going to bring in to interview and how quick are you going to pull a trigger? That's what I'm interested to see. But it was time for Sendek to go. And now, you know, as we talk here, we're starting to really get some spin on this carousel. And we'll see what happens. You know, we can get to what Marshall said on Jim Rome today in a little bit. But overall, yeah, here we go. Between games, this stuff always happens every year. And Arizona State just the latest to move.
Listen, I like Herb, and I don't ever like there's nothing fun about somebody losing their job. Like, it would suck if it were me. It would suck if it were you. And it sucks even if it's a millionaire basketball coach. All that said, like, I get it. You know, where's the program? You know, while you're watching Sean Miller build a monster down the street, you know, where is the Arizona State program really going under Herb? Like, he's a terrific coach in terms of, like, coach, but, you know, there's so much more to high major basketball than just, you know, being great on a dry erase board. And a lot of the stuff that it takes to, you know, zap energy into a program or to compete at the highest levels consistently, they just hadn't happened. And if they hadn't happened in, you know, 9 years for the most part, not the way you'd want, then why were they going to happen in year 10, year 11, year 12? Like, it was always a matter of time. And honestly, 9 years is a long time in this profession. So I got no issue with them pulling the trigger on it. In fact, it makes a lot of sense to pull the trigger. I'm curious, Sam, you live in LA. You watch the Pac-12 as much as anybody. How good of a job is the Arizona State job? What's possible there?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a solid mid-level Pac-12 job. Like, I know that I saw some people on Twitter a little bit down on the job in general because you're next to Arizona. Like, the recruiting in Arizona is not that great, but you do have California next door. That should help out a little bit. So, I think it's a pretty mid-level job. I would say it's definitely below the UCLA and, you know, the Arizona realm. And it might even have, like, fewer resources than a USC, which, in my opinion, is still just, like, a sleeping giant out there. But, you know, in that 5-6 range in the Pac-12, I think you could easily do worse. And I think Capel would do a pretty good job there. He's known as a really, really strong recruiter. I'm pretty sure he had a high influence as far as getting Tyus Jones and Jahlil Okafor there. I want to say he was pretty big in Jabari Parker as well. So I think that he could do really well there. It wouldn't surprise me at all. And, you know, I just got to pour one out for my fellow Carnegie Mellon grad, Herb Sendak, you know. He'll get $2.7 million as a buyout. But you sure. always got to feel
and
bad.
And I would think Sendak in the next 2 years, like, I don't know if it'll be Ivy or Patriot. Like, he'll go to a smaller school. He'll be a head coach again. It'll just be that's yeah. where he'll kind of – he'll sail off and enjoy his final 10 years or so as a coach in a smaller school. I would think that's got to be coming.
Because Herb's not – he's not as old as people
yeah,
think.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, like, how old is he? How old?
He's 52.
Right, that's what I was going to say. He's not as old as people think. Like, if because he's been around forever.
Yeah.
And he – I don't know if this is right or wrong, but he seems to look maybe older. Does he? Or
maybe no, I know what you're saying.
Or maybe he's aged into his age. Like, does that make yeah. sense? Maybe he looks 52 now, but he also looked 52 when he was 42.
Yeah.
like maybe that's it. For whatever reason, I was surprised, and I didn't realize this today, but whenever it was, a year ago, 2 years ago, at some point I remember going, really? He's only that old? Like, yeah. I remember having that thought. And so, yeah, he's not at retirement age. He's still got coaching years ahead of him, yeah. whether it's at the mid-major level, low-major level, or even, God, if I'm some, you know, young, you know, hot, you know, head coach, you know, I might put him on my staff, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, he can definitely help. I mean, I just... He's, you know, he had two big chances.
Sure.
NC State fans still hate him, but
they can't. Like, how about this? I used to every time Sidney Lowe would like miss an NCAA tournament, which was literally every year. I would point out, hey, listen, you know, NC State fans would be going bananas, and I would just point out, like, hey, you had a guy who went to the NCAA tournament. You said that wasn't good enough, so here you go. Like, whatever. These same, I bet you, I haven't tweeted the name Herb Sendak in a year before today. Or before, like, last night, and certainly haven't really written, you know, anything about NC State, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. And, like, I still had countless people, like they can't, they still are hung up on what I
so
used
weird.
To. It is weird. I'm like, you really think, it's so weird, like, you're really thinking about me? Like your day is built around, I can't wait to tell Gary Parrish that Herb Sendak failed at Arizona State, and you're an NC State fan? Like, that's and by the way, he got 9 years. Like, it's not like he fell on his face inside of 2 or 3 years. Like, he did 9 years in the Pac-12. Maybe it wasn't nine great years, but it was 9 years of paychecks. And so, I don't know. I just find it weird that NC State fans, like, they clearly remember that stuff. There's otherwise no reason to be tweeting me about Herb Sendak.
Hey, real quick. Yeah. Goodman did tweet this, but and I did think about it. Like, since you know Howland so well, do you think he might have just a little bit of remorse here for pulling the trigger so fast on Mississippi State? Or do you not even think he would have been a reasonable candidate at Arizona State?
No, that's Goodman being silly.
Okay.
You know, Ben, Ben, first off, I'll tell you.
Arizona State's a Nike school off the top of my head. I can't
remember. No, here's the thing. Okay, so this was about to say. So yesterday, I get a text message from a source. And they say, hey, it looks like Arizona State's going to open up. This was yesterday. This is way before it started really circling on, because I immediately do Twitter searches. There is nothing really about Herb Sendak. And I get a text from a source that sounds like Arizona State might open. And I said, you know, then you ask all the normal questions. You text some other people. You try to bounce it off. And one of the first things I heard from somebody else is, yes, I'm hearing the same thing. And I said, really, where are you hearing this? And they said, from some Adidas people. And so I'm like, Adidas people, that's weird. And so I'm like, okay, but Arizona State's a Nike school, except they just signed an Adidas contract.
Did they really?
That's what I was told, like today. I haven't looked it up yet because somebody actually told me this like texting back and forth when I was at dinner tonight, because I was having the same conversation with them, and they were like, you know, they signed an Adidas. So like, I really do think on some level, it might be the smallest of levels, but on some level, Adidas helped pull the trigger on Rick Ray at Mississippi State and on Herb Sendek at Arizona State. But here's my central point to tie this back to Ben Hallen. If Adidas people were talking about this yesterday, and they clearly were, then Ben Hallen knew about how that the Arizona State job was going to open.
Yeah.
Because okay. He's as connected to the Adidas people as anybody. So my guess is, and it's not a guess, it's like a educated conclusion by connecting dots. Ben knew he couldn't get Arizona State, right? Because he had to have known it was opening, because the same people that helped place him at Mississippi State were the ones chit-chatting yesterday about Arizona State opening. And so, and by the way, if they had already reached out to Jeff Capel, that means that they have known this is going to happen. Basically, they were just waiting for the NIT season to end, and then they were going to pull the trigger on Herb. Like, this had been decided. And so my point is this. Ben knew Arizona State was going to open, and if he thought he could get Arizona State, then he'd be living in Tempe now instead of Starkville. Simply put, he knew he couldn't get that job, so he took this job. Say, you know what it's exactly like? Last year, Bruce Pearl took Auburn pretty quickly, right?
Yeah.
And people were going, oh, I wonder if Bruce Pearl wished he would have waited, you know, because Tennessee opened up. Well, Bruce knew that he couldn't get... But it's the same thing. Like, Bruce knew he couldn't get Tennessee. Even if... Because you had to know there was a chance Tennessee could open, because either they fire Konzo or Konzo bounces to another job. But you had to know there was a chance. And... Bruce knew that there was a chance, just like everybody knew there was a chance, but he also knew there was zero chance he would get that job. So there was no sense in waiting, didn't matter. Same thing here. I'm pretty confident in saying there's no sense in waiting for Arizona State to open, because he already knew he wasn't going to be in play at Arizona State. And the connection to Capel, I'm told, is Jerry Colangelo, USA Basketball, lives in Phoenix, and they're moving USA Basketball there. And Colangelo has a relationship with Capel through USA Basketball. So that it's all connected in that way.
That's actually pretty intriguing.
Yeah. So that's that. And, you know, if it's Capel, like good for him. You know, like, he has competed at the highest levels of college basketball. You know, took VCU to an NCAA tournament, you know, had Oklahoma ranked in the top five, you know, got a two seed that could have been a one if Blake wouldn't have got injured. Briefly in his sophomore year, I think it was in February, he missed some games. They ultimately lost in the Elite Eight that year to North Carolina, the eventual national champion. And then, of course, you know, there's some NCAA stuff, Willie Warren and Tiny Gallen, and it blew up on him, and then he was out. But somebody said today that he's been through Duke rehab, which is sort of a way to scrape all of that stuff off of you. And now it looks like he's going to be a Pac-12 coach if he wants to be a Pac-12 coach. And to your point, Norlander, earlier, and then we'll move on. I'm told he hasn't really decided whether he wants it or not. But I don't, like, if you get an opportunity to be a Pac-12 coach and live in Tempe and make, you know, in excess of $1 million a year. Why not? Because really, in the Pac-12, who scares you right now? This is a question I wanted to ask. Sam, Sean in Arizona, clearly.
Yeah.
Outside of that, who scares you? Who are you worried about?
Oh, yeah. No one really.
Right.
I mean, if you think that UCLA is, you know, going to stay as strong as they have been the last 2 years and two Sweet 16s, but it doesn't seem like they have a ton of momentum going forward with their recruiting classes or anything like that. So I would say that the Pac-12 is pretty open right now, as far as outside of Arizona, who could rise up and really move to the forefront. But yeah, I would say Arizona State's as good a candidate as any, to be honest.
Well, it's sort of like Ben Hallen going to Mississippi State. Like, okay, in the SEC, who scares you?
Yeah, it's exactly like that.
Calipari at Kentucky, that's a monster, right? Billy at Florida, although, like, I'm not sure how much longer Billy's going to be at Florida. You know, we can get into that another day. But I just more and more people seem to think that the NBA thing is really a very real possibility this offseason. So, like, okay, if Billy's at Florida for the next 5 years, he's a giant. But I don't know that people think he's going to be at Florida for the next 5 years. Okay, Bruce Pearl at Auburn. I got, you know, that's a real thing. And then, you know, if Alabama can really swing and hit Greg Marshall, or if they miss there, Archie Miller, like that. But like, really, who scares you in the SEC? Whereas, like, this is the difference to me between like Ben taking Mississippi State and Capel theoretically taking Arizona State and Buzz taking Virginia Tech. And I've been through it. I know why Buzz took Virginia Tech. I get it. But like, there's such a hard climb in the ACC. I mean, you're dealing with, you know, Patino and Krzyzewski and Roy Williams and Mike Bray and Tony Bennett and, you know, Jamie Dixon and Pitt are always going to be solid at least. You know, Leonard Hamilton's always going to get guys at Florida State.
Syracuse fans are screaming at you right now.
Syracuse, you know, when they're still Syracuse, I guess. They're still Syracuse.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what I'm saying. Like, there's a lot of people to get through to get even to the top, you know, third. But in the SEC and the Pac-12, like, I'm not terrified of too many things right now in that league. And so if I'm capable, just to bottom line it, I can't speak for him. I'm sure there's a lot that goes into it. But, you know, pay me in excess of $1 million a year to take a pretty good Pac-12 job and live in Tempe. I think I would feel fortunate that that's a nice second lease on my head coaching career. The other big news from today out of the Big 12, Marcus Foster dismissed from Kansas State. This is a guy who was, I think, legitimately, you know, an All-American type candidate in the preseason, you know, and boy, his sophomore year was just all over the place. He got benched in spots. He was suspended in spots and now removed by Bruce Weber, according to the school, from the Kansas State basketball program, Norlander. I saw somebody tweet this earlier. I think it might have been our buddy Jeff Eisenberg, but I'm not sure. But either way, the point was good. Like, who has gone from a nobody to a somebody to a nobody more quickly than Marcus Foster? He was an unheralded recruit who became a first-team All-Big 12 guy, and now he's like a man without a basketball team. All of this happens in a span of about, you know, 15 months, which is just a remarkable rise and then fall. What do you make of the Marcus Foster story?
Yeah. So this is going to be interesting because, I mean, I'd love to know the real story. I mean, it's, to me, from the outside, the optics on it, I mean, he really must have had to have just really been a problem because he was really talented, so vital to that program and the success that they could have had. And for Bruce to have disciplined him and dealt with him as much as he did and now to dismiss him, I mean, there really had to be some rocky stuff there. So then the question becomes, okay, what happened? Coaches are going to want the real deal here. And who's going to go after him and where he's going to land? Because, listen, we're going to have another 500-plus guys transfer. And in reality, when you eliminate grad transfers, in which there are a few every year that will, you know, leave and start somewhere else, when you look at a guy who's not a grad transfer and has real impact, I mean, we really have a 10 max, maybe even 5.
Yeah, there is nothing I care less about than the transfer epidemic. Dun, dun, dun. Like,
right.
I don't care. Like, it doesn't bother me at all. Like, you could make it where kids could transfer whenever they want to. I don't, like, why? It doesn't affect my life in any way, and it's not nearly as big a problem as people make it out to be. You know who it's a problem for? College basketball coaches who are trying to figure out the rosters. But is it, how many transfers a year actually affect the sport?
Right. It's very limited.
I totally agree with both of you. I think that they should be able to transfer whenever they want.
Yeah, who cares? Who cares? I don't care
where they want to be.
Right. Yeah.
With Foster, where is he going to go? Is he going to have to sit a year? I would think he's going to. But wherever he goes, I mean, if he's able to really settle himself and rehab who he is, generally speaking, he could be a huge boon to a program. But I don't know what it is. I just don't know if he was just a jerk. I don't know if
it's got to be more than a jerk. I mean, listen,
it's got to be, right.
He was a jerk. All right, and a lot of it was like, I heard the dad. I don't want to speak out of turn. Sometimes I get confused on what I've actually heard and what.
Yeah.
But I think I heard, I'll just say, a relative, kind of bananas. You know, like, I heard.
I want to say I've heard that as well, but I'm not going to pin it directly on him because I can't confirm.
Yeah, it might not be a dad. But. Okay, like, let's just say this: I was told a relative had been a big pain in the ass of the coaching staff, like whoever that is. And I mean, let's just keep it simple. Bruce Weber is going to be on the hot seat next year. you really kicking off a dude as talented as Marcus Foster unless you feel like you have no choice?
I mean, that's the thing. That's what I'm kind of getting at. It's kind of amazing. So we'll see where he lands and how soon that happens. I do not think he'll be an eligible player next season. I think we will not see him again until 2016. So, but that is big news. I mean, that is a major transaction, kind of smack dab here in the middle of the tournament. We might even forget about it for a month and then look up and we'll see where he's going. But it is intriguing, that's for sure.
You know, the runoff rule has been brought up as it connects to Marcus Foster. And though the NCAA has the ability and a history of interpreting stuff however they want to interpret it, so, like, anytime you're trying to predict who can get a waiver and who cannot get a waiver, like, you're just guessing because there's no there is really no rhyme or reason to the way they rule on this stuff. I know they think there's a rhyme or reason, but we can find similar examples. And one got ruled one way and one got ruled the other, and you really can't get a sensible explanation from it. But I will say that the runoff rule is typically for kids who are told their scholarship's not being renewed. The way that Kansas State released this information with a quote from Bruce Weber made it clear that he was kicked off the team. Like that quote mm-hmm. will live forever in the NCAA office, and the quote is essentially, he didn't live up to the standards of being a Kansas State University basketball player. And that's not run off as much as that's dismissed. And so I would be surprised if he's able to get a waiver. But I've been surprised like literally 50 times when certain players have gotten waivers. So we'll see. But I don't think this, in the spirit of the rule, I don't think this qualifies for a runoff rule exception. I think I'm reading that correctly.
Yeah, so I actually looked up. It's like a three-pronged system as far as getting a runoff waiver. You have to demonstrate that he would not be allowed to return, which is obviously true here.
Sure.
He has to be in good academic standing, which who knows, but
presumably
we'll assume the best. Yeah. And then the third one is a written statement from the student athlete's previous institution indicating that the previous institution supports the request. So that might be a problem.
Right.
Well, given that he has booted him. But, well, I mean, who knows? Maybe they could, like, make a deal where, who knows, like, if he says, oh, I won't transfer within the Big 12 if you give me this written statement or something like that.
They won't let him do that, period.
Yeah, well, like, whatever it is. I just remember when Dominic Woodson transferred out of Memphis, like, the truth is he was dismissed from the program. Like, he was bananas, all right? And, like he literally got into a fist fight in study hall, okay? Like, he's a crazy person. And I mean that in the nicest way, but he's dealing with a lot of stuff, this guy. And but Memphis was very careful about how they phrased him leaving the Memphis program. They never used words like didn't live up to standards. They never used words like they didn't say dismissed. They said he was Dominic Woodson is leaving the Memphis basketball program and we wish him the best and all that type of stuff. And then, you know, Memphis actually did work with Tennessee to get him eligible at Tennessee immediately. And then, of course, he got kicked out of Tennessee.
He got eligible and then he was off the team before.
right, because he's bananas, I'm trying to tell you. But in that, as I'm telling the story, I'm remembering the context. Memphis had an obvious incentive to do it because they needed a scholarship for Kedren Johnson. So they could work with Dominic Woodson to free up that scholarship for Kedren Johnson. And so everybody won. I guess it comes down to, on some level, is Kansas State going to fight on behalf of Marcus Foster? And honestly, if you're Bruce Weber, like, why would you?
Yeah.
You know, why would you?
I hear you.
But we'll see. All right. Hey, you want to talk about actual games?
Hey, let's talk about this little tournament.
What are those?
Okay, so Thursday, we got the Sweet 16. You've heard of the Sweet 16, right?
In theory.
Okay, so we have a Sweet 16. It starts on Thursday. The first game is a 7:15 Eastern tip. It's a Wichita State Notre Dame followed by 7:47 tip, Carolina Wisconsin. 9:45 tip, West Virginia Kentucky. 10:17 tip, Xavier Arizona. Let's start with Carolina Wisconsin because there is actual news pegged to that. North Carolina gave an update on Kennedy Meeks today. Norlander, update us.
Well, I mean, broadly speaking here, Kennedy Meeks has a lingering knee injury, and it remains up in the air if he's going to be available. And as we're talking about this, I mean, it feels like almost every tournament in the past half decade that Roy Williams has gotten to, he has had a player that has not been healthy.
I know.
When they get there, yeah. He is really bugabooed by this. To me, this is actually the pivotal. This is very pivotal. In our bracket prediction, long before I realized Villanova wouldn't make it out of the first weekend, I always usually like to take a one to lose in the Sweet 16 because you don't usually get all four ones to the Elite Eight, let alone the Final Four. So I was like, you know what, whatever. North Carolina's got NBA talent. I'll do that. But if they don't have Meeks, and I don't even think it's even feasible now. I mean, if he's been quoted as doubtful. They've mildly upgraded that at this point. But if he is not serviceable at his full capacity, that really eliminates a huge defensive factor when you look at Kaminsky, because it can't just be Bryce Johnson. It's really more Kennedy's job to deal with Frank. So this takes it from a game that I actually thought had a really good chance of being close to. Maybe Wisconsin's going to be able to free up and do some more. And Wisconsin, by the way, is in a similar position with a less vital player with Trayvon Jackson. I mean, right. When is he going to be fully good to go? That still has not been decided. So
let me ask you this. You think even – let's say he is good to go. Can he help them?
Yeah.
Can he help them? I don't know if he can help. Like, I guess he – I don't know. Can he help them?
Do you want a Kennedy Meeks with, like, a bum knee trying to guard Kaminsky on the perimeter?
No, I don't even mean Kennedy Meeks. I mean Trayvon.
Oh.
Wisconsin. I'm like, can Trayvon Jackson help at this time of the year? Just bring you back. And it just seems like it – I mean, I guess it's not bad to have as many bodies as you can, but on some level, I just think, like, I mean, it's do or die time, and trying to put somebody back into the rotation can be tough, can it?
Yeah. I really like his game. You know, he's a senior. I find him to be fairly reliable as an overall player. I don't know. I think they are better. I guess, plainly speaking, yes. Even though he hasn't been around for... gosh, we're going on 2 months here. I still think that they are a better team with him than without him. But there is some legitimacy to, okay, when you get a body back on the floor, how quickly can you adjust to it in a do-or-die kind of situation? But especially if they were to play Kentucky, you need all the bodies possible. And, sure. And Trayvon Jackson certainly will help you in that regard.
I got that.
Here's my other thing with that, too. They're really not deep, especially on the perimeter. Like, even if you bring him off the bench for 15 minutes a game,
sure.
Like 10 minutes a game, he could be useful, I think.
Yeah, no, I'm not debating whether he is. I'm just wondering out loud, honestly. So I've been asked a lot because in interviews over the past couple of days about Kentucky and assuming they get past West Virginia. I mean, does this surprise you? They're a 13.5-point favorite over West Virginia. That's about what they were over Cincinnati.
A little surprising. I think West Virginia will cover.
I've just – like, that number seems weird. The idea that – because I think we all think West Virginia is better than Cincinnati, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, by any metric, like, they're better. And yet the point spread's really not any different. Like, they were favored over Cincinnati about as much as they're favored over West Virginia, which is, I don't know, just I noticed it. I don't know what it means, but I noticed it.
I can take a guess on that if you're interested.
I am interested.
My guess is that it's going to be a higher possession game.
Yep.
So there's going to be more of a chance for, like, Cincinnati – there are going to be fewer possessions, yeah. So there was going to be less of a chance for them to, like, really break away from Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Whereas with West Virginia, it's probably the same.
Yeah.
But that's total guess. Like,
no,
I don't really.
No, that's as good as that. Like, actually makes some sort of sense. So no, that's probably a good guess. But we all assume, like, listen, if how often during the year do you see a team lose a game when they're, you know, basically a 2-touchdown favorite in basketball, in a college? It doesn't happen that often. I mean, certainly if you're a 14-point favorite, You almost certainly win the game. Whether you cover or not, it's a whole nother deal. But,
right.
You know, I just remember, like, some of the, quote, big upsets from college basketball season, and they'd be teams that were, like, 9-point favorites and 10-point favorites. So when you're favored by 14 points in a college basketball game, like, you are a significant favorite. They you know, barring, the biggest surprise in the history of college basketball or something close to it in the modern era, they'll move on. And so people keep asking me, who presents the tougher – Elite Eight matchup, Notre Dame or Wichita State? Norlander, what do you think the answer is?
I guess Notre Dame. I'm not super confident in saying Notre Dame, but I would say Notre Dame just because they're so good offensively that, you know, if they're really able to light it up from deep, that's going to present them with at least a glimmer of hope that if they can keep it going and Kentucky is off offensive, but they just don't have size. I don't like either matchup. Wichita State's a much better defensive team, but they're even less undersized than Kentucky. So it's a matter of like, okay, you want to take the team that is just ridiculous on offense, but just doesn't have the defense period, or do you want to take the smaller team, not quite as good as offense, much better on defense? Give me Notre Dame by the slimmest of margins, but I ultimately think that West Virginia is going to give Kentucky a more interesting game than who they play in the Elite Eight.
You know what? My instincts tell me it's Notre Dame to the extent that either one of them can challenge. I don't think Kentucky will have a big problem with either, but I think it's Notre Dame for the at least they might be able to outscore them. You know, like Kentucky will score on them, but maybe Notre Dame can keep scoring on Kentucky. Who knows? But Wichita State, there's something to be said for if they were to get there, they would have played Kentucky to literally the buzzer, a year ago. And though this Kentucky team's different than that Kentucky team, if you're Fred VanVleet, Ron Baker, Tekel Cotton, you can kind of look across and go, "Yo, man, we played these guys to the buzzer last year. We can play them again." You know, Carl Anthony Towns wasn't involved. Neither was Willie, by the way. Or was Willie? Was Willie at Cauley Stein involved?
No, he did not. He did not play in that game.
He didn't play in the Wichita State game. Yeah. So, we know it's different. But I'm just saying, from Wichita State's perspective, you could probably talk yourself into it in a way that, you know, I think most teams probably can't. Like they all say, like we heard the West Virginia kids, you know, they put their drawers on the same way we put our drawers on. But like the bodies inside their drawers are better than the bodies inside your drawers.
Always hitting new heights on the podcast.
Right. So like, it's a nice little quote. I used it in a story, but come on. Whereas I think if you're Wichita State, you can convince yourself. And if you're Greg Marshall, you can convince your guys, hey, this is Kentucky. That's John Calipari. We played them to the buzzer last year, and they went to the national championship game. We're good enough to do this. Beyond that, if you're there, by definition, you would have just beaten the Big 12 regular season champs and the ACC tournament champs. So at that point, I think you'd talk yourself into anything. And then probably lose by double digits, right? I mean, that's the way it'll go. But Sam, like, does any of what I just said make sense? Like, if you're Wichita State, I think whatever mental barrier there might be to playing Kentucky, like, it almost might not exist for them. Does that make sense?
I think it helps that you've played largely the same group of guys last year. Like, yeah, Willie wasn't there. Yeah, Towns wasn't there. But you had Julius Randle there. Like, it was – there's at least a similar talent level. You know?
Yeah, I got to hop in here. Willie did play.
Did he? I thought he did, yeah.
Kentucky fans listening to this are probably going nuts. Some of them have probably already tweeted us mid-podcast. I don't remember. That's what's nuts about it. I don't remember. I thought it was the game before, but it wasn't. It was the Louisville game. And how ridiculous is this? I mean, Willie, who's been, honestly, in my opinion, third best player in the country at this point, he came off the freaking bench in this game last year. Oh, my God.
Oh, because so Dakari Johnson was starting down the stretch.
Oh, my. That's just ridiculous.
That's crazy, but... But here's the thing about both of these teams. They at least limit turnovers, and they both shoot the three well. I mean, I guess that helps a lot against Kentucky, but those are two things that you really have to do against Kentucky to even have a shot. You have to really take advantage of all of your possessions by not turning the ball over, and you need to at least shoot the ball well from deep. I doubt that it matters, but
yeah.
They at least do things well that
I'd love matter. Selfishly, I would love to be in the building. Kentucky, Wichita State.
Yeah, you're going to Cleveland. What do you want to see, Norlander?
I would love to see Kentucky, Wichita State in that game to be a one possession game, 3 points or whatever, with 5 minutes to go. I think that would be amazing. I think when you get to the tournament and you get to these huge stages and if you can get to the 5 minute mark and you're within 2 3-pointers, I think at that point you've got enough momentum, enough belief that it can happen, and then it's really a lot of instincts can take over. So it would be incredible, and it's certainly possible. I mean, it's the tournament. We've seen great games over the years, but I just it's hard for me to see how Wichita State could even get it to that point, because Kentucky is so physically and athletically, like, they're so much better than Wichita State, that I don't see how they don't get murdered in the paint, like, on both ends. But it is possible. Don't get me wrong. I would never want to doubt Fred VanVleet, and I would love to see Kentucky, Wichita State. But I'd be surprised if it got to that point.
Question.
Go ahead.
How much money is a Kentucky win worth to Greg Marshall's next contract?
Oh, that's a good...
he's already... Seriously. Like, he is... I don't know if people... thought I was exaggerating with the money that I reported, you know, in the Alabama story. Like, that's not an inflated number. In fact, I was conservative with the number. like, you know, I put in excess of $3 million. Like they're willing to do whatever they got to do at Alabama. I liked the idea today that when Greg was on with Jim Rome, he didn't, and I know we're not supposed to cuss on the podcast, but just like, excuse me this one time, like he didn't bullshit about it, you know? Like he, you know, Jim asked him about the Alabama offer and he said, I haven't talked to Alabama, but if they have a crazy offer, we'll certainly listen. It will take a lot to get me to leave here, but like I'll certainly listen to what they have to say. And I don't know, on one hand, like I think Wichita State fans are actually like they've been through this enough to where they can sort of respect that on some level. They don't feel like their coach is spinning them and constantly working behind their back to try to get out of there. They understand he's turned down big opportunities before and he'll do it again unless there's one that's too good to pass up. But one of the things when I was in Wichita a few weeks ago that Greg said to me over and over again is, though he's had, you know, a million job offers since he's been at Wichita State, he's never had the one you can't refuse. He hasn't had that one yet. And he does think those exist. And I don't need to get into specifics, but I think he has an idea of what the jobs, the offers you can't turn down. I think he has a list in his head. But he hasn't had one of those yet. The Alabama one, I don't think was in his head, but when we're talking about all of the resources you could possibly desire, Nick Saban, like literally Nick Saban coming to recruit you and making you one of the highest paid coaches in America, and I'm talking $3.5 million a year, $4 million a year, like whatever it takes. If Greg Marshall says no to Alabama, it won't be because of money. It'll just be because he decided he doesn't want to leave Wichita or he can get something better for him, but it won't be because of money. And so like that's, we're already there. So I really don't know how much more he can help himself with a victory over Kentucky, but my God, if he gets to a victory, but a win over Kentucky takes Wichita State to a second Final Four.
Well, here's the weird part. Okay.
If
that happens, right. It's almost this weird thing where, like, you know, Greg and his family, they love it there. When you have done that and you've gone to a second Final Four, it's this weird thing where if you beat Kentucky, just try to even freaking envision that, okay, that Wichita State ends Kentucky's undefeated season. That's just mind-boggling if that happens. Like, you've created a program and a job that instantly becomes – among the most recognizable, broadly speaking, across the country. Wichita State would be
Butler. It would be Butler.
It would be Butler at the height of Rad. It really would. And so then, like, what are you leaving for? Like, you're really leaving for like three or four jobs. And I don't know. I understand the money is a huge deal, but if you do that, like, then what you've done is you've lifted the tide for all boats for the program, essentially. So that's where I think it would get really interesting, because I don't see that if that happened, I don't necessarily think that Greg would think, okay, I've taken this program as far as I can go. I think he'll think, okay, no, I can actually win national championships at Wichita State. So if I can do that, unless it is just unbelievably an upgrade in lifestyle and my family is fully on board, like, why would you leave at that point?
Well, I think here would be why, because Greg's not dumb. And though he has a tremendous amount of confidence in his own abilities, as he should, he also recognizes a lot of this is, like, they got lucky with Fred VanVleet. They got lucky with Ron Baker. Unless you just think that, like, they developed Fred VanVleet and Ron Baker. Now, maybe they did. But how often are you going to find pro-level guards to recruit to Wichita State? You know what I'm saying? Like,
maybe, but maybe this stuff.
Same way Butler got lucky. Like, we look back on those Butler years, like little scrappy Butler. They had like two pros at least.
You know, they had Sheldon and Gordon, and then Matt Howard was obviously a beast.
Right.
But
so, like, I'm just saying, at that level, like, and this is one thing I talked to Brad about when he was at Butler. Like, they went to back-to-back title games, and I think the player we were talking about specifically was Cody Zeller. So they go to back-to-back national championship games while Indiana's struggling. He has the best relationship with Cody Zeller you could ever hope to have. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here, but whatever. He's coaches the Celtics now. It doesn't matter. And at the end of the day, he just can't beat Indiana for a kid. Like, it just ain't going to happen. And he recognized that. You know, though Shaka can build VCU to a certain level, and Brad could build Butler to a certain level, and Greg can build Wichita to a certain level, there are still some things you just cannot do. Like, you're not going out and getting McDonald's All-Americans. You're still not doing that. And if you're Greg Marshall, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. If you do, you know, whatever happens over the next week or so, do you start to look at it and go, okay, is this really as good as it ever gets? Could I ever possibly reasonably expect to duplicate this? Because how much of it is, I'm just a wizard, and you can give me any little underrated point guard and any sort of big bodied, you know, shooting guard, and everybody else missed on them, and I'll develop into pros? Or how much of it is they just found something, like this unique combination, the way Brad got Gordon and Shelvin on the same team? This will forever be the Van Vliet. Listen, I think he'll always be good at Wichita, but we're not talking about being good. We're talking about 30 games in Final Fours. Like, it's just a hard thing to try to replicate. Whereas if you're at a really good power conference school, you got it rolling. Or even like outside of the power structure, but like a place where you can recruit at the highest levels in a way that you typically can at Wichita or Butler or VCU. Like Calipari did at Memphis, or like, you know, Thad can do it at Ohio State, or Billy could do it. Like, once you get one of those jobs going, then you can, it's not as difficult to replicate high level success. I think it's very hard to replicate this kind of stuff at the Wichita, Butler, VCU level. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying?
I totally do. Agree.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, but also inherently, and I'm not saying it would be enough, but like, you get Wichita State to yet another Final Four, like, it inherently just increases the program's overall profile, where you're going to have better recruits on a sliding scale come into your lap.
They're already getting better recruits. I think they signed.
Yeah, they got three top 100 guys coming in next year.
They're already getting better. I'm just saying, they're already going there.
They
could go to two Final Fours in 3 years. Like, let's just pretend they do it. You ain't beating Kansas on kids. You're just not.
That's a fair point. Mm-hmm.
And so, like,
and that, let's 5 stars and 4 stars. 3 stars you might, but 4 and 5 you won't.
You're not dealing. You can't swim in those waters. And so, but on the other hand, like, if you go to a second Final Four, why don't you just take $2.5 million from Wichita, ride it out, retire at 57, and let them name everything after you, build you a statue? Like, really? Like, that's the other thing. Like, I do believe that one of the reasons Billy Donovan didn't leave Florida for the Magic the first time was because he had all of this success. And what is life about? Like, I had this conversation with Billy one night. I think we were at LeBron camp, and it was like late in Akron, Ohio. And this was right after, like, this was the summer after the second title, after he had already been to the Magic and come back. And he said he started thinking in these terms, which I thought was really smart, or at the very least interesting. He said, you work your whole life for this moment, and then you finally achieve it. And then it's like, now I'm going to go just run away from it. Like, you don't even get to enjoy it. Like who does that? And is it smart to do that? And I recognize people have done it before, but like, that really resonated with me. Like, you work your whole life to maybe win a championship, or maybe become one of the few guys who've ever done two in a row, and then you're just immediately going to run from that success. Like, shouldn't you just like sit in it for a little while? Shouldn't you just like really soak it all in? And I think that it's more complicated than what I'm making it out. But that I remember Billy saying those things. And if you were Greg and you do have like this unprecedented level of success again at Wichita State, there is a little bit of that. Like, do you really want to run to another job and start trying to rebuild and run away from this success that you've worked your whole life to have? Like, I could argue both sides of it. Clearly, I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, you can, GP.
I'm really just talking to myself at this point.
So,
hey, why don't you guys go? I'll wrap this thing up by talking to myself.
To be fair, do you want to give Sam a little bit of time to talk anything Zona Xavier, since he's going to be in LA and at the game?
Does Chris Mack have any opportunity to do the whole teacher-pupil upset?
I think that he'll keep it close for a while. Like, they're playing really well. But I don't think it's going to be an upset. I think that I wrote in the West Region like reset today that I think that going down to like the 7 minute mark, 6 minute mark might be like a 5 point game, 4 point game, something like that. But Arizona's too talented. I think like this Xavier team, I did the top 80 starters today too. I don't think they had anyone in the top 40 or top 45 even. So like Stainbrook's their best guy, and yeah, it's going to allow Arizona to play Karnowski. They're probably going to have to play. I think that Ristich is healthy. I haven't seen him in a while, I feel like, but you know, like they're going to have to play a little bit bigger to combat with, you know, Stainbrook, but I don't think it's going to be a problem at all. I think that as long as Xavier doesn't get hot from three and have one of those like epic shooting nights that just randomly happened in the NCAA tournament, I think it'll be fine. I don't see it happening.
And I know we had sort of a relatively boring Friday, Saturday, Sunday relative to that Thursday, but like, have you thought about like what the Elite Eight matchups could be? I mean, they could be bananas, right? You could
nasty. Get
Kentucky, Wichita, Arizona, Wisconsin, Duke, Gonzaga, and then whatever in the other one. Who cares? But like Kentucky, Wichita, Wisconsin, Arizona, Duke, Gonzaga, like that is awesome.
So awesome. And you could even get Patino Izzo. So, I mean,
yeah, and Patino Izzo, which would be awesome. Yeah. Just the idea that we have spent 4 months talking about Patino's bad roster and Izzo's bad roster, and they could end up playing on Sunday for the Final Four, is just a testament to how good those guys really are.
Crazy. Tom Izzo has one top 90 recruit per 247 Sports on that team. He's one. Brandon Dawson. That is insane. I think that this, I've been saying this for couple weeks now, maybe 3 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that, probably 3 weeks, that I think that this is his best coaching job since that 1999 to 2001 like Final Four run with Mateen Cleaves and like Morse Peterson and all those guys. Like, this is incredible that he has this team as far as he does already. Like, I didn't think that they would be a top 25 team this year. I didn't think they would be, like, I thought they were going to struggle to make the tournament, and he has them as a top 15 offense with a bunch of guys that weren't really high usage players coming into this year, and they're all upperclassmen.
No.
So it's just so, like, it's an incredible job by him,
dude,
totally make this offense.
I remember you tweeting, like, whether it was, I don't know if it was December or early January, but it was at some point when Michigan State was struggling, and you tweeted, can anybody give a reason why Michigan State will make the NCAA tournament other than Tom Izzo? And like, it was a reasonable question because you looked at that roster, you looked at the way they were playing. Like, I sit in a studio with Mateen Cleaves like two nights a week, every week since January. My team would always say, Coach Izzo's the best, but like, he, you know, he knows what a good Michigan State roster looks like and this Michigan State roster looks like. And even like last year when people thought maybe they had a talent issue, like they still had Gary Harris and Adrian Payne. Like, there was no, the only like real talented dude they have on this team is a guy who is, honestly,
I don't think they have an NBA player on this team.
No, okay, there's none of that, I don't think. Yeah. But beyond, my point is this, like, their most talented guy is a guy that some people would call the most disappointing guy from his high school class, which is Brandon Dawson.
Dawson, right.
He's the only, I did this story earlier in the year on LeBrian Nash.
Mm-hmm.
I think LeBrian Nash and Brandon Dawson were the only top 20 recruits from that class that actually made it to their senior years. And at least LeBrian Nash, like, balled out. He just is what he is. But he, like, at least, like, scored a million points per game every, you know, whatever. Like, Dawson is, and I don't mean, like, I'm not picking on him. I'm just, like, he's not, he never became what people thought he would be. That's fair, right?
Yeah. Okay. Dawson is what he is. He's, like, a 6'6" forward tweener.
Right.
Who
okay.
never developed a jump shot.
Right.
Like, he's just a physical guy that really defends and really plays good, like, incredible defense. He's probably a top 20 defender in the country.
So when your most talented dude is a dude who hasn't lived up to expectations and you're still technically favored to go to the Final Four, because that's where we're at right now. Michigan State's the favorite in the East. So
stupid.
When your most talented guy is a disappointment relative to his high school ranking and you're still the favorite on March 24th to make the Final Four, that Izzo's insane. Like, the idea that he could, like, he's one of those guys who, like, his reputation is well-earned. He, like, really is a master at this stuff when it comes time for the NCAA tournament. All right, let's get out of here. We all got
I got a freaking pack.
I got a freaking pack too. I got to fly too. You guys are going to games. I'll be watching games on television. I'll be back. I'm going back to New York tomorrow. So, you guys and Sam, enjoy the Staples Center. Norlander, enjoy Quicken Loans Arena?
Yeah, I believe that's at the queue. I'm almost positive that's where it is, yeah.
Quicken Loans Arena, and I will enjoy the CBS Broadcast Center on 57th between 10th and 11th. If you haven't subscribed to the Ion College Basketball Podcast, Do that on iTunes. It's the quickest way to get your hands on the latest edition. So knock that out. And either way, we will talk again on Friday. Take care.